Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. He is Mike McDaniel. Mike, I don't know if you know this yet, but no longer is it going to be May. It is May. It is May 1st as we record this. How are you? How's your May so far?
So far, so good.
So far, so good. It's been a good...
So far, so good. I'm not getting those six- and seven-figure bag deals, though. So
it could be better, you could say.
Could be a lot better in that case.
Yeah, that's a relevant, strange statement to what we're going to talk about tonight.
Where do you get that from?
Yeah, huh? Where is this coming from? Yeah, Mike, there were a couple stories that have popped up in the last couple of days that really kind of caught our attention. It had the group chat blown up with you, me, and your brother-in-law and number one podcast stan Scott. Lots of opinions here about some of these stories, so let's get into them. You know, we've talked a decent amount on this show in the last, really it's been close to 12 months since some of the name, image, and likeness rules went into play. Certainly over the last couple of years, as the transfer portal has risen in prominence and the one-time free transfer rule kind of has come about. Like, we've talked a good amount about these things, but Mike, there's been a couple stories that have come out in the last few days that have really, again, caught our attention, and we just kind of wanted to fire some takes off. So that's what this episode is about. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. Yeah, we got to get our takes off here.
Yeah, and that's the nice thing about having a podcast is sometimes you can just press the record button, start firing off takes, and see how it goes. The other thing is, while we're here, it's May 1st. We are like about 24 hours removed from the end of the NFL draft. So we'll get into that here towards the end in terms of, who got taken where, kind of what was interesting, and just general takeaways that we have from that. So stay tuned for that. Mike, my dad texted me the other day, and he forwarded me an article. He's of the age where, he does read the paper online sometimes, and he will use like the proper share button on the article to send me emails with a link to the article. And he sent me an article from Rick Bozich, I believe it was, who is a columnist for the Louisville Courier Journal. And he was talking about a news story that had come out regarding Nigel Pack. Now, if you're not familiar with Nigel Pack, he was a basketball player at Kansas State. Decent to good player. I think he averaged something like 17, 18 points a game. Almost 4 rebounds, 2 assists. Pretty decent shooter. 43% from 3-point range this year. Like, so pretty, decent little player. But I say little player because he's literally 6 foot tall. He's a guy that's not like, he's not incredible. He's nothing, totally out of line, but he's a solid basketball player, Mike. And he had announced that he was going to transfer into Miami from Kansas State. The thing that came along with that was almost immediately a booster, I guess, for Miami. And that's probably not the right technical term, but let's just go with it. A booster for Miami named Adam Pappas of the Next Sports Agency. Recently negotiated an NIL deal for Kansas State transfer Nigel Pack that included $800,000 over 2 years plus a car. Pack was considered to be the number one player in the transfer portal before committing to Miami. The deal was funded by billionaire John Ruiz, who has been at the forefront of the NIL movement, orchestrating deals across several sports for the Miami Hurricanes in particular. And so Rick Bozich goes on this whole thing of like, again, this isn't LeBron James. This isn't Vince Carter. This isn't, insert 1990s or 2000s era basketball star in the making. This is a decent player, but in a lot of ways, kind of just a guy. And this guy is getting 800 grand in a car for 2 years to play, and hopefully be a starter at Miami. Like, really? And on some level, like, again, NIL compensation is supposed to be about using your likeness to draw attention to a product or a brand or something like that. Is that really $800,000 worth that he's going to get? And Mike, there's another piece of this now that becomes relevant, because this whole thing comes out about Nigel Pack getting $800,000 in a car for 2 years. When it then comes out a day or two later that Miami Hurricanes guard Isaiah Wong says he's going to enter the transfer portal on Friday if his NIL compensation isn't increased. Basically says something to the fact of, I'm a two-time All-ACC player. I was the second leading scorer on the team that just reached the Elite Eight. I'm the leader, all this stuff. I should be getting more NIL money if this is what this guy is getting relative to what I'm getting. Mike, are you seeing a problem with this yet?
Well, who is it that's going to determine the market worth, right? That's a big, 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 big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Look, like, we got to distinguish between two things here, right? There's NIL, and then there's pay for play, right?
And those are really meant to be distinguished, like, separate things.
Two different things. Like, pay for play, pretty simple. If you come to USC, I'll give you $1 million. That's pay for play.
Mm-hmm.
NIL is, oh, if you commit to USC, there could be opportunities for you to market your brand, get some sponsorships, local car dealer, has you in a commercial, or your name is, on a bunch of, t-shirts from a local consignment shop or whatever. That's NIL. That is marketing around a player, not paying the player to come to school there, but marketing around the player. Those are two different things. Pay for play is what got a lot of players in trouble in the past, right?
Mm-hmm. Like
Reggie Bush, because of, there was a whole autograph scandal. That was only like part of it, Reggie Bush, right? There was
a house
incentives. Right. There were incentives for him to come to USC that were not necessarily like NIL.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that was way before. And I mean, that's years ago. That's, early 2000s. Right. So we're in a weird spot here with college football, because we'll get into these stories in a second that are more recent, Joey, but there were two stories in particular over this past week where we're seeing a very troubling trend, and something that you and I have hinted at, and a lot of people who pay close attention to college football have hinted at potentially being a problem, where you have the free transfer, you get one-time free transfer, wherever you want, you're eligible right away. If you do it twice and you got to sit out a year unless you get a waiver from the NCAA, we all saw that as a good thing. I continue to see that as a good thing. I don't see why that should be an issue. You should be able to transfer out of a program, out of the situation you're in, and transfer somewhere else mm-hmm. and be immediately eligible. I support that. I also support NIL. I think players should be paid for their name, image, and likeness. What I don't support is pay for play.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue now that we're running into here as college football fans is we are watching a college football free agency unfold, but it's not structured because there are no structures around. There's no structure really around the transfer portal. There's a date where you're not eligible for next season, right? If you don't enter by, it was actually today, May 1st, as we record this. If you didn't enter by May 1st, you're not eligible for the 2022 season, right? Mm-hmm. At your new school. So there's that. But outside of that, players can leave whenever they want. They can transfer your new school, enter the portal, leave the portal whenever they want. There's no real guidelines about NIL at all, which, again, you got to be careful because players need to be able to make what they're worth on the open market, right? So that's tricky.
Yep.
But it's a bad mixture right now where the NCAA never really prepared themselves adequately, like the member schools, school presidents, et cetera. The NCAA as a body just never prepared for the NIL era
yep.
at all. We saw it coming from a mile away. We knew NIL was coming for a decade plus. We knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. And players have always been paid by boosters. That's something that's always happened under the table. But what has not always happened is this era where you can transfer wherever you want and be immediately eligible, right? So we'll get into two stories in a second where that mixture is very bad.
Yep.
It's a very bad mix when you don't have any rules and regulations in place surrounding those two things.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly kind of what leads to situations like this is Isaiah Wong saying, I'm the leader of this team. I see what my teammates getting paid. I should be getting paid more. That's not how it works, man. Like, again, that's not the point of name, image, and likeness payments. Like, the things that this is for is think back to, like, Todd Gurley years and years ago getting suspended for signing, you know, autographing a few footballs for $300 or $400. That's a name, image, and likeness situation. Think back to, what was it? He's like a punter or like a long snapper or something for UCF, I think, who was basically prepared to get banned by the NCAA from participating because he had a Twitch channel that he was trying to monetize or something like that, right? Like, this is how NIL is supposed to be done is, you know.
I got one. How about the NCAA trying to suspend Trevor Lawrence and his then fiance, now wife, at the beginning of the pandemic, there were the social justice movements, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to raise money for, it was two different things. They were trying to raise money for healthcare workers, and they were trying to do a fundraiser for some social justice initiatives during the Black Lives Matter stuff in the middle of 2020, mm-hmm. right? So those are two separate things that Trevor Lawrence and his wife were starting fundraisers for.
Mm-hmm.
And the NCAA tried to strike both of those things down, saying that he couldn't be compensated. Right. Not that Trevor Lawrence was even taking any of that money for himself. He wasn't. But the fact that he started the fundraisers could be a compensation issue. Right.
Yeah.
These are the types of things NIL is supposed to fix. Right. So you don't need to worry about that anymore. Right.
Yep.
And so everything's been ass backwards with NIL and thinking about it from the NCAA forever.
Mm-hmm.
Forever. It's been no foresight. Zero foresight whatsoever.
Yep.
And I'm not saying the answers are easy because they're not, but there was no thought put into it. So now it's just kind of like this wild, wild west. It's a total mess right now.
Yep. Interestingly, two of the other folks that are transferring into Miami who have benefited from some of the NIL changes in the legislation, Haley and Hannah Cavender, women's basketball players from Fresno State who are transferring in to Miami. Mike, they are like Instagram / like TikTok stars, basically. They have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of followers. Again, that is how they get compensated, right? Is then being able to advertise products to their hundreds of thousands to millions of followers. You know, like this is the point. It is not that they are like superstar basketball players. That's, you know, and those things are just not inherently related, basically. It's not about how good you are at your sport. It's about how much people want to follow you and you know, that whole thing. So how, you know, a pair of twin athletes at the college level amass hundreds of thousands to millions of followers on Instagram or TikTok, not the point, not my business, could be anything, use your imagination. But the point is, again, this is what it is. So we've got this Isaiah Wong thing at Miami, and it's especially fortunate for this podcast that these are both ACC relevant issues. So Isaiah Wong at Miami basically saying, I'm a good player. I should be getting more money from NIL. That's not the point. That misses it entirely. He might be putting his name in the transfer portal because then there was some firing back from, what was it, John Ruiz about, like, I'm not renegotiating this deal. Fine, whatever, interesting. Then, Mike, I think what really set both you and I off in particular and really inspired us to record this episode is I believe it was it Friday night maybe that you texted me a link to a story that said Pittsburgh All-American wide receiver Jordan Addison, who won the Biletnikoff Award as the country's top wide receiver in 2021, is considering transferring to USC. Now, this is rumored. There have been no confirmations on it. So start here. Take all this with a grain of salt. This is all a rumor, reports, sources, these kinds of things. Nobody has come out and said anything. But the idea is here that apparently Jordan Addison is considering transferring to USC now. And again, like you said, it's, you know, you got to be in the portal by May 1st if you're going to be eligible for the upcoming season.
That doesn't mean he's not in the portal yet, right? It just might mean that reporters haven't gotten it yet, right?
Yeah.
So he could very well be in the portal at this point as we sit here recording. And, of course, naturally, we'll release this podcast tomorrow and the news will come out. So as we sit here recording, there's been no news either way to indicate if Addison's in the portal or not.
Right. Again, he might be. We don't know. It hasn't been reported that he is or anything like that. But there were multiple implications, basically, that he had been offered some very large NIL deal to come to USC. And then there was some speculation or some reply somewhere. It's like, oh, no, I'm not considering transferring to USC for NIL deal. That has nothing to do with it. It's just purely for professional development and growth as I prepare to go to the NFL, you know, when I'm eligible after the following season, you know, all this stuff, blah, 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 blah. Mike, this is some of the biggest nonsense I have ever seen in terms of how this is all supposed to go. And I think is a peak example of how broken this system is right now in terms of how little legislation or restrictions there are around it. There's no structure. There's no rules. There's no real governance or enforcement on any of this.
No governance. None.
If you have kids in the car, maybe turn the radio down, because I'm... You know what? Again, the nice thing about having a podcast is you can kind of say whatever you want, but I'm going to give you a second here. Turn the radio down, maybe use some language here. Mike, this is bullshit. This is absolute, utter bullshit. Like, that we are at this point now where in deep into April, coming off of spring practice, the guy who won the Biletnikoff Award and probably would have been like a first-round pick this year if eligible is saying, I'm thinking I'm about maybe transferring to USC for professional development, you know, getting ready for the NFL. Dude, you don't need anything to get ready for the NFL. It's very clear why you would be interested in transferring for USC. By the way, there has been no indication up until now that you're actually in the transfer portal. So there really shouldn't be any sort of negotiations or contact allowed. That's tampering. So if you're just being offered stuff to transfer somewhere when you're not in the portal to begin with, that is breaking so many supposed rules of this system that very clearly like can't be enforced. It's bullshit, dude. It's nonsense. It's bullshit. And it makes me really angry to see this happen. And I think it says something, Mike. It makes you and I angry seeing this happen. We're not even particularly Pitt fans. This doesn't even directly affect us. And yet, like, we can just kind of see how it impacts Pitt fans and others, you know, potentially around the country.
Yeah, I mean, eat shit, Pitt, all that. the Pete Thamel tweet from Friday night, Pete Thamel, ESPN, if you don't follow him on social media, I mean, he is the college football reporter. He's college football's Adam Schefter.
For ESPN,
formerly Yahoo, now ESPN.
He's no Brett McMurphy, receiver. But ESPN doesn't have him anymore, so hey.
Yeah, that's right. Our own Brett McMurphy, after he had left over like 2 years before.
That's right.
Pitt wide receiver Jordan Addison, who won the Biletnikoff Award as the country's best wide receiver, is strongly considering transferring from Pitt. He's yet to appear in the NCAA transfer portal, but his transfer looms as a strong expectation. USC is a top potential destination. Joey, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not in the transfer portal yet, how is USC a top destination already?
Pass. So, I'm taking the fifth.
Yeah. So, point being, how it's supposed to work is when you enter the transfer portal, that is the first time that a coach is supposed to see that you're in there, right? That you're in the portal and you're available looking for a new school.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to be the first time a school sees that.
In theory, there's no other way that they would know that you are, you know, entertaining the idea of maybe leaving your current school, forgoing your scholarship there and seeking one elsewhere. Theoretically, there's no way that they would know that that's the case.
And the next tweet by Pete really irritated me. And I don't think he meant to, or maybe he did. It seems like he was kind of caping for USC a little bit here. He says, Jordan Addison is from Frederick, Maryland. Caleb Williams, formerly of Oklahoma, now at USC as a quarterback, is also from the D.C. area. There's ties from the DMV relationship that could help Addison end up at USC. Bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
That is... Pete Bamel is one of the top college football reporters in the sport. He knows full and well that this isn't because the transfer of Addison from Pittsburgh to USC, USC being a top potential destination, isn't because he might know Caleb Williams or he's friends with Caleb Williams because they're both from the DC metro area. We know that's not what this is about.
Uh-huh.
That's not what this is about.
If they wanted to play so together so badly, why didn't Caleb come to Pitt?
In fact, ESPN didn't report on the NIL at all. They actually almost entirely swept it under the rug,
mm-hmm.
which was interesting to me. So Pat Narduzzi, of course, gets real mad at USC, calls up Lincoln Riley. That's a big part of the story we can't overlook, Joey.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Narduzzi calls up Lincoln Riley to express his displeasure. I put that in quotes. He's fucking pissed. He's mad, right? He's real mad. He calls up Lincoln Riley because he believes USC has been tampering, right? Which, again, like we mentioned, the first time that a school is supposed to see that you're open to transferring is when your name is in the portal, mm-hmm. right? We know the griminess of college football. We know what's taking place here. But what bothered me, too, is in this article from ESPN, they're talking about all the NIL stuff kind of in an umbrella. You know what ESPN says? They said, well, the source said that Addison isn't looking for an NIL deal. Any move would be tied to his professional development, right?
LOL. Okay.
LOL. It's a source close to Jordan Addison. Of course he's not going to say that because USC was tampering.
Like, of course.
Of course. What's he going to say? Oh, yeah, it's tied to NIL. He can't say that. He implicates mm-hmm. himself.
Yeah, he implicates himself. He implicates the people he's going to play for, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
And by the way, and by the way, the whole, like, you know, you can tamper with players by, you know, well, I recruited him 3 years ago. I've still got his high school coach's phone number in my cell phone. I can text the coach, you know, from high school or the handler or the 7-on-7 coach or whoever the hell. I can text that guy and say, hey, have you heard from Jordan Addison recently? Is he looking to maybe move on to USC right. for a large NIL deal, just hypothetically? That's like the worst kept secret in all of college football, right? Like that's it. We all act
that's
like
it's been going on for years.
You know, you can't really prove it. And I don't know if it's something you could really legitimately get in trouble for, but it happens everywhere. And it is the definition of tampering. And yet you kind of just can automatically get away with it.
Addison is one of the top returning players in the sport for the 2022 season. As potential transfer comes at a time when one-time transfer rules and name, image, and likeness legislation have brought unprecedented roster fluidity to the sport, which is mm-hmm. what we're talking about here, right? Mm-hmm. Pete Thamel knows that it has nothing to do with the Caleb Williams relationship. He knows that Jordan Addison and the source close to Jordan Addison was probably his fucking dad. It's probably his dad. So I get really angry about this. Probably like his dad or his brother, Addison himself, a source close to Addison. You're not going to tell the truth about this.
By the way, how fantastic is that phrase, unprecedented roster fluidity? Like, good Lord. We're talking about free agency here, bro. Like, that's just call it what it is. Like, unprecedented roster fluidity. Give me a break.
It's crazy. It makes me mad. And so I feel like, and Pamel's a great reporter, and I follow him, and I read all the stuff. But, like, I look at that, and I think, you know what? He's caping a little bit for Addison and USC and for college football. And we can go down the whole media rights stuff. We know kind of where ESPN stands in the hierarchy with media rights for the college football playoff and how they benefit from, like, the same four or five teams making the playoff every year. You know, we can talk about that at length.
Oh, the better they get, the more interesting those games are, the more viewers they get, the more advertising money they get. Like,
because we're all still going to watch those games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it
just gets to a point where it's like, where is this kind of going to go from here? I guess that's the next question.
Yeah. There are so many angles to this thing, particularly surrounding this Jordan Addison story, that absolutely drive me insane. And it's this idea that, again, there are, you know, 5, 10, 12, I don't know, maybe 15 programs in the country that are purely just going to get propped up. And I texted you this, Mike, the other night. If you really start sitting back and thinking about it, and you look at this you know, transfer portal plus one-time free transfer plus NIL payments system,
right,
plus just the insane ease of tampering and lack of real policing of it in college football,
right,
what you basically end up with is an NFL where there is no salary cap. Players get an automatic opt-out after every season out of their contract, and there's no tampering rules.
Right.
So at any given point, the richest teams can just reach out to players on other rosters and just say, hey, I could probably pay you more. You want to come play for me? And then at that point, right, you have no real parity at all. And I get that, again, college football is not a sport that historically has had like a ton of parity relatively. Like, I get that. The same programs are relatively on top all the time. But it really does feel like in the last 5, 8, 10 years, like
college football playoff era,
the college football playoff era, that this talent has more and more and more concentrated into these top programs to where, again, the first year that Kirby was at Georgia, Georgia Tech beat him at Sanford Stadium. And now I'm like, right, legitimately, like, I not even like hot take guy at all. Just like, will Georgia Tech ever beat Georgia again? Because Georgia and
yeah,
Georgia is recruiting at such an insane over the top level that like Georgia Tech
doesn't
have
15. They just had 15 players taken in the NFL draft.
Yeah.
And there's more where that came from.
Yeah. There's more coming. And it's like, how does Georgia Tech compete with that? You know, it took Alabama with multiple of their draft eligible guys, you know, to take them down and that kind of thing. Like, is this fun? Like, is this college football legitimately felt more fun 15 years ago? Because, yeah, like, you know, some of these teams are superpowers. You know, look at like the, again, you mentioned Reggie Bush back in, you know, the day, like Reggie Bush, USC, like they had some real star power there, like a lot of it. But then West Virginia had Pat White, Steve Slayton, Noel Devine. Like Louisville had Brian Brohm and Mario Yerudia and, you know, Harry Douglas, some of these guys, like, a lot of these teams still had guys that were really good players and they could keep them around for 3 or 4 years and win some games, you know, pull upsets, that kind of thing. You don't get that anymore. Georgia Tech had Jahmyr Gibbs for 2 years and now he turns around and goes to Alabama.
Right.
Where's the, what, you know, like, and again, the more that I think about this, who's the victim here, Mike? If Jordan Addison leaves Pittsburgh, transfers to USC for this big NIL deal, goes and wins another Biletnikoff, you know, becomes a first-round draft pick, whatever that he was probably already going to be anyways, who's the victim here? It's not Jordan Addison.
The fans. It's the fans.
Yeah, it's not Jordan Addison. It's not Lincoln Riley in USC. It's honestly, it's not even Pat Narduzzi in Pittsburgh. Pat Narduzzi is getting millions and millions of dollars. And even if he gets fired, he'll still get millions of dollars. So that's fine.
Great buyout. Yep.
Yeah, if this is as bad as it gets for Pat Narduzzi, he's still doing just fine. Mike, the victim is you and me. It's the fan. Like, it's fans of people, you know, fans of teams that are not these top 8, 12, however many programs that can't afford this stuff. We don't have some billionaire booster sitting around with crypto money just trying to hand it out left and right to whoever seems like the hot name at the time. Like, that's the thing that sucks, coming to terms with that, is that your team, my team, if nothing changes, like, we're hoping for like one good season out of somebody on our team's roster before they're inevitably going to transfer to one of these like 12 super mega programs. That's awful. It sucks. It's not what college football has been historically, as inequitable as the sport has always been. It is putting the whole thing into overdrive if that's the road we're going down.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the thing too, like the parts of it that we saw coming were like Oklahoma and Texas were like, all right, we got to strategically align ourselves with some of these powers in college football if we're going to be able to keep up. Like, we got to be in the same conference. And, you know, Oklahoma and Texas tries to make that move to the SEC. Why did they do that? Money, right? When a team from the SEC wins a national championship, you know who that benefits, Joey? It benefits the entire conference.
Mm-hmm.
It benefits everybody in the conference when a conference team wins a national title. Ask Clemson. It benefited all the ACC schools. There is money that's allocated to other schools based on bowl performance, bowl appearances. Like, when you win a national title, it changes everything. And there were several reasons why Oklahoma and Texas end up in the SEC. They're like on their way there, obviously. But they saw this shift. And Oklahoma and Texas are too. Texas has been down for a while, right? But relative to the last 25, 30 years in college football, Oklahoma and Texas are powerhouse sport from a, you know, from a historic perspective. These are two really important programs, college football. And they are trying to align themselves with the Georgias, Floridas, Alabamas of the world. Why? Money. And we've seen realignment before, right? And, you know, we see kind of where the landscape of the sport is headed. And I think the issue, the transfer portal, being able to transfer somewhere and be eligible immediately is not an issue. You should be able to do that. Coaches can do it. They get paid millions of dollars. You know?
Yeah.
They're able to go to a new school, be eligible right away.
And this is important, Mike. Like, what you're saying is important. We believe in this. You should be able to transfer easily. Any student from any school can do that as long as your credits transfer. Like,
Should be able to do that. You should be able to make money off of your name, image, and likeness.
That's just American.
College football, but that's right. But college football is in such a weird spot right now. There's so much money involved in it that you have coaches leaving potential playoff teams to go coach elsewhere because they are going to be paid infinitely more than they are at their current school. Look at Brian Kelly, right? Brian Kelly leaves Notre Dame like a few days before they're figuring out if they're going to be in the college football playoff or not. Now, we understand they weren't. They lost to Oklahoma State in the bowl game, all that.
It was on the table. Like, it was squarely on the table at the time that he walked away.
Right, but it was on the table. He actually said in his weird exit speech, like, I hope you guys make the playoff, you deserve it, whatever. And then he was off to LSU, where he's making like $90 million or whatever it is. There's so much money involved now that the coaches don't even care.
Yeah.
It's just different now.
Yep.
And I think what's problematic too is like, we don't know really where this is headed. I mean, we can sit here and talk about, oh, this is where we think it's going. Oh, we think it's going to be just like giant super conference in the SEC and the rest of college football just kind of be their own entity. And we can talk about what that is, but like, there needs to be some sort of resolution where the member schools kind of get a hold of the transfer portal and the NIL and all of this under one umbrella, and they try to figure out a way to have this make sense for everybody. And it's, I don't know what the answer is. That's the problem, right? So I can sit here and bitch and moan and complain, but like, I don't necessarily know what the answer is either, openly. But I know that it's not supposed to look like this. I mean, you're in a spot right now where players can freely go wherever they want as long as they haven't transferred before. And now you can pay players, and under the guise of NIL, you can get them to come to your school and pay for play scheme, because that's what USC is doing with Jordan Addison. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, where does it end? And what are reasonable regulations? I mean, you want players to be able to profit off their name, image, and likeness. You also want players to be able to enter the transfer portal and be immediately eligible if they want. So, like, what's the fix? And ironically, Joey, Dabo was right. Everybody gave Dabo Swinney hell, right? When he was talking about how there needed to be kind of some bumpers on the transfer portal, because he could kind of see that things were going to get a little bit hairy, where like players can be on your team one week and at a rival school the next with no repercussions. And everybody killed him for that, Joey. And that wasn't that long ago. Was that before the start of last season when we made that quote officially?
Something like
wasn't that.
Wasn't that
long
ago? Probably.
And
it's easy to forget that this has only been going on for like the NIL stuff again is less than a year old.
Oh yeah. And Dabo got killed for that. And we made fun of him too, but he was right. he was right.
Yep. Yep.
And again, I don't know what the fix is, but like you've heard other coaches, Nick Saban's mentioning it now.
Yeah.
Nick Saban, who's, by the way, Bryce Young, he's a $1 million quarterback at Alabama.
Yeah.
He's secure in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bryce Young's making plenty of money. That's his quarterback. Saban knows he's a stud, won the Heisman Trophy, right? And led Alabama to the national title game. And we know he's a great player. He's going to be one of the top quarterbacks off the board next year. And Saban's saying that it's an issue. They got to try to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So the big, I think where this is going to change, Joey, is when you get a bunch of the top coaches in the sport kind of all pull in the same direction. Ironically, Lincoln Riley complained about this when he got to USC. He complained about this. He was talking about the transfer portal and concerns about roster management and how to manage a roster in this new era with NIL and players leaving and stuff like that. Ironically, he complained about that. Yet now Jordan Addison is rumored to come to his school for a huge payday. Pete Thamel reporting that USC is a top destination when Addison hasn't even entered the portal yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that Lincoln Riley was the trigger man, right? Mm-hmm. It could be a booster. It could be somebody, oh, do you know a guy who knows a guy like you were mentioning earlier? But like Lincoln Riley could stand to benefit from getting one of the top receivers in the country in year one, you know, as he tries to reestablish USC as a powerhouse in the Pac-12.
It would go a long way, wouldn't it?
It would. But he's complained about this too recently, like within the last 4 months. So these coaches are kind of having their cake and eating it too right now, because they're like, you know what? Nothing's stopping me. Let's go get him.
Yeah.
Let's go get Addison. Let's go pay Bryce Young and make sure he's, you know, coming through the door. Let's, you know, and I don't blame the coaches, Joey. I don't blame the players. There are no rules. So
you can blame the governance structure. Like if you want to blame anybody, we've created this wild, wild west of a sport and a world. And it just is, again, it is designed to benefit the rich.
And to be fair, at least from what I've seen on social media, the reaction to the Jordan Addison thing, you know, people are frustrated, not with Jordan Addison. Some people are angry at Lincoln Riley, but most people are just angry at the NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
And the school presidents for not figuring this out years ago. And yep. And that's where the, you know, that's where the pitchforks are headed.
Mm-hmm.
They're all mad at, they're mad at the NCAA.
One other thing, just for context here, by the way, you mentioned Bryce Young being the $1 million quarterback. We mentioned Nigel Pack being the $800,000 point guard coming to Miami. Mike, how many Instagram followers would you guess that Nigel Pack has?
$45,000.
Mike, he has 8,500. He has less than 10,000 followers. Bryce Young has 201,000 followers.
I was going to say, college football a little bit different.
Go look at Twitter. Nigel Pack has 4,800 followers. Like, the level of impressions, and by the way, if you go look at Bryce Young's Instagram over the last 6 months, he's made four posts, really, two for Logan's Roadhouse, one for Subway, another one for Cash App. Like, he is using his 201 followers to create impressions for those brands, thereby using his name, image, and likeness to validate that value, right? Like, all that stuff. We're gonna sit here and act like whatever crypto bro company nonsense that is endorsing Nigel Pack is getting $800,000 worth of value off less than 10,000 followers.
Right.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
Mike, I have an idea of something that might at least kind of put some guardrails around this whole thing and kind of simplify a little bit.
Okay.
We are going to talk about that in just a second. Before we do, we got to remind the people about section103.com, because your boy is a consummate professional and does not forget about these things. Section103.com, it is the internet's premium Georgia Tech apparel. It is the easiest place to go find great-looking apparel to support Georgia Tech. We have told you guys about them all the time. They've been talking a lot recently. You know, it's graduation season, Mike. I don't know if you knew this. We've got a lot of people kind of graduating from college into the new world, I guess, the professional world. Don't recommend it. Stay in college as long as you can. That's way more fun. But if you are graduating and you want to kind of stay supporting your alma mater or someone else's even, go to section103.com. They have t-shirts. They have v-necks. They've got sweatshirts, hoodies, all sorts of great things. They've got shirts with the Tech Gold, the ATL logo. They've got all the official word marks, everything. For whatever reason, these things tend to be pretty tough to find for Georgia Tech in particular or elsewhere on the internet. They are not tough to find on section103.com, and they are very, very comfortable shirts. They look great. Cannot recommend them enough. Mike, use promo code GOACC at section103.com for 10% off of your first order. Again, for all the grads in your life, for all the tech fans in your life, even for just people that just need a nice soft shirt or something to work out in. Mike, you're not even a Georgia Tech guy. You love your section103.com wear. I do as well. I am a Georgia Tech guy, but then, yes, that helps. But yeah, performance wear, cotton t-shirts and sweatshirts, all that stuff, all of it's great. Again, section103.com. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order. Mike, that's how you use your followers to generate NIL money.
We're also sponsored by BetUS, where we generate zero money.
Not anymore. Not
we generate $0.
We are a good partner for advertising until we're
they
not.
Don't pay you.
until you do nothing, you don't keep up your end of the bargain. Anyways, shout out to section103.com and Steven. They do keep up their end of the bargain, both in, you know, our partnership here as well as just like creating outstanding products. So go check them out. Mike, I have an idea for maybe putting a couple of guardrails on it. And I've told you, I think it's probably an oversimplification and it's a little dangerous, but would it improve the situation if we put a cap on the number of transfers that a team was allowed to take in a given offseason? If I said that Virginia Tech is only allowed to take 5 transfers every offseason, that's it. Doesn't matter how many you lose. Doesn't matter, you know, it's, you still got the 85 scholarship cap, like all that. If you limit the number of transfers that any given team can take in, call it 5, call it 3, call it 8, I don't know. But if you limit that, then at least you are putting limits on the amount of activity getting out of the portal that you can have across the country. And maybe you're limiting the likelihood that these things are going to happen and you're limiting people's interest in jumping into the transfer portal.
I like the idea. There is a flaw, though.
I'm confident there is.
You are now putting a premium on those 4 or 5 spots that a team has to take a transfer in. And you might be inadvertently now putting more funds into those 5 high-profile transfers pockets at the bigger schools. But to some degree, you can't really control that.
And I don't think my intent with that idea or that suggestion is to get the money under control as much. It's more to try to limit these instances of these things happening. You know, if you're only able to take in 4 or 5 transfers every offseason, you do have to be really picky and particular about where you're doing this. And it doesn't become this giant open free agent system that it seems to be right now of people just transferring every which way. Like if I look at USC's transfers, not including Jordan Addison, they received a transfer from Arizona State, a transfer from Ohio State, a transfer from Auburn, a transfer from Alabama, a transfer from Stanford, Oklahoma, Colorado, Kansas State, Oklahoma, Colorado, Washington. That's a lot of transferring, dude. Like, that's not good. It's not good for the players. It's not good for the sport. Like,
well, we're also seeing instances too where like kids are entering the transfer portal because they don't like their current situation, but then they can't really find a good spot elsewhere. So now they're just in the portal.
And that's the thing too to think about is putting some restrictions, some rules and stuff around when can you enter the transfer portal, when can you exit the transfer portal, things like that. Some of that like inherently should be designed to help protect kids from themselves. You had a bad practice, got chewed out by the coach, going to go enter the transfer portal. Hold on. Like, think about what you're doing and what the potential consequences are rather than just being kind of heated after you got chewed out by your coach.
Right. Right. Because right now it's just like thousands of players in there. Probably a decent amount of them think they're a lot better than they actually are. Right. And they end up at schools they probably didn't envision themselves ending up at and kind of overplayed their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, to your point, you do need to protect kids from themselves a little bit. But are you really allowing true freedom of movement if you're limiting the amount of players you can bring into a school? I think it fixes the problem. But I think that's going to be what the detractors would say about that. It's, well, you're still kind of screwing the kids.
If you make that the rule and everybody's aware of that, mm-hmm. the kids are included in who's aware of that, and you got to know, like there's a you don't even have to be good at math to look and say, you know, pull up the calculator app on your computer and say, oh, there's 5 transfers allowed per school at the FBS level. There's 130 FBS schools, or even there's 66 Power 5 schools and Notre Dame, or maybe like 70 now, the Big 12's expanding. I don't know. Anyways. You know, there's only so many spots that you have to land in, and you can see how many are already in the portal, you know, numbers like that. It's, we can all be adults and we can make decisions for ourselves, but at the same time, you know, it's make sure that that's a well thought out, you know, planned decision and not like an emotional thing that ends up, you know, causing ripple effects probably for a good amount of the rest of your life if you don't end up getting a scholarship at a high level program again.
Well, that's the thing too. Like, we can say, oh, you can only take in 5 transfers, but like, really, shouldn't you just in theory be lowering the amount of scholarship players you can take in? Because like, those transfers count in as players who are, you know, it counts towards your scholarship count. So really, are you saying, okay, less than 85 scholarships? Because, I mean, players graduate and stuff like that, and that's always in flux. But, like, we see it on the recruiting trail all the time. You know, we got offers, but is it a committable offer or not? Well, yeah, you can commit to us if this kid doesn't come here.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happens in recruiting. That's what happens, I'm sure, in the transfer portal as well. That part of the sport is not necessarily going to change, but like, if you look at it from that standpoint, Joey, you know, say you got like, I mean, 85 scholarships, let's just make it easy, right? Let's say, all right, 10 kids graduate, you have, you know, 75 scholarship players, you have 10 open scholarships, right? And let's say this is, again, very, I'm just doing this on the basis of simplicity. I know this is not how it works because there are a lot more scholarships given out to kids who are freshmen. I get that.
Yeah.
But say there were like, okay, you have 10 open scholarship spots. Okay, 5 can go to recruits and another 5 can go to the portal, right? Is that basically what you're saying? Where like you can only take in 5 transfers. So how do you fill out the rest of the roster? Just recruits?
Yeah. Like there are still high school football players out there.
Right.
I mean, yeah, and right. Again, kind of what you're alluding to is that the whole like 25 new player restriction that we currently live by in theory, mm-hmm. there's all sorts of things you can do to, you know, manipulate that. You think the NFL salary cap is maybe kind of fake. 25 new players for a college team is extra kind of fake. Anyways, USC's bringing in 13 transfers this year. How many schools are bringing in transfers that are a net neutral college scholarship, but that are reducing the number of scholarships that can go to high school players?
Right.
Like, so that's one of the benefits too. If you limit transfers, you can make sure you're maintaining the number of scholarships going to new guys coming in from high school. So I think there's some benefit to that at the very least, but I don't know. It was just a thought, and it's
not the worst idea I've heard.
It's very half baked, Mike, quarter baked, might even be giving it a lot of credit. But it's, I don't know, there has to be something that changes here. Has to be. Otherwise, again, it just kind of continues to encourage absolute anarchy. And I mean, you want to talk about killing interest in a sport.
Like, right.
When we're in October, and again, October of 2021, and you're watching Jahmyr Gibbs work on putting up 1,000 yards for Georgia Tech, and the conversation immediately turns to, wonder who he'll be playing for next year. Dude, you will drive people away from this sport in droves if it's so blatantly obvious that nobody can have nice things if you're not one of those 12 top programs. Like, that's...
Yeah.
It's gross, it's frustrating, and it's going to happen. It has to.
I mean, people are just going to get bored of it,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I know people are like, oh, I'm not watching college football. I mean, okay, we'll see you in the fall. You know, mm-hmm. you'll be watching, just like the rest of us. I'll be watching, you'll be watching.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to start to see a drop in some of the games that used to matter. There's going to be a drop in viewership, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all of a sudden, the Iron Bowl, like, less people are going to be... Now, I get less people watch it now because Auburn sucks. But, like, for example, less people are going to watch the Iron Bowl, you know, when Auburn's good.
That game went to overtime last year, Mike.
Auburn's better than we thought, huh?
Barely, somehow.
Yeah, they're so good. Their quarterback transferred out. He's playing quarterback at Oregon.
I don't know what the rules say about the black magic that's very clearly in play at Jordan-Hare Stadium, but that game always gets very sideways when they play it there.
Yes. Shout out Chris Davis. And not the one who strikes out 100 times a year for the Orioles and has been retired for 3 years now.
300 times a year. Yeah.
There's nothing but strikeout. I don't know. Something's going to have to change, though, because I think we're going to get to a point where everybody, and you're already seeing the fatigue with some casual college football fans that are like, I don't really care about the playoff. It's like, you don't care about the game that decides who goes to the national championship. Why not? It shouldn't be that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's already fatigue with that. You know, people were killing Notre Dame when Notre Dame would get in and lose by a couple scores, right? And everybody would kill, oh, I'm so sick of seeing Notre Dame in that game. Let's get Cincinnati in there. Cincinnati kind of did the same thing. Everybody talks about, oh, you know, semifinal games are all already blowouts. Well, you know, why don't we go back to BCS? And I'm like, this is a circle.
Yeah.
This is literally a circle. And now everybody's getting paid and there's transfers and now there's tampering. And it's just different. Stuff's different now.
Maybe it would be better if we just didn't play a national title game and we just all voted on who we think would be the national, who's the best team. Maybe that's the way we should do it.
Oh, you mean how they did it in the 90s?
Yeah.
Again, a circle.
The 1890s, yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's weird. Notre Dame losing to Boston College in November cost them a national championship. Because you know what the national championship was back then? Were you number one in the poll after the last game of the season? You know? Mm-hmm. Were you number one in the poll after, you know, the regular season, the bowl game, you know, the bowl games? You know, what was your ranking? That's how the national championship was determined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pre-BCS. Just different.
Yeah. Yep. Mike, it's, you know, there's aspects of this sport. We love it to death. Like, we spend time, you know, our own time regularly kind of coming in here and talking about it. And we, you know, this isn't the most lucrative business to be in of, you know, podcasting where we have our day jobs. But we do it because we love it. You know, we love the sport. We love the teams. You know, there's so much excitement and all that stuff. But there is definitely aspects to it that are increasingly irritating and kind of turnoffs over the years. I hope that something gets reversed and we can at least, you know, rein it in a little bit. If not, I'm going to be very disappointed.
Yeah. Yep.
But don't know how many problems we're going to be able to solve tonight. Although I will confirm that Chris Davis struck out 219 times in the 2016 season while also hitting 38 home runs on the year. So,
literally Chris Davis and Adam Dunn are the same player.
My favorite baseball stat that I think I've ever come across was as a rookie, I think it was 2016 or thereabouts, Joey Gallo finished the season with 41 home runs out of 94 base hits. He had more home runs than singles as a rookie, I think it was. Amazing.
He just came up and started hitting tanks.
Fantastic. Mike, let's move on. Let's hit the NFL draft real quick. I've got the numbers in front of me. Spoiler alert, if you are not a if you did not follow it all that closely, and Mike, for his other day job, had to, and God bless him, because the ACC had a grand total of like 21 players picked in the draft out of 262. That's not great. It's not up to what it has been. But then again, I mean, that's pretty much in line or better than what everyone else had taken other than the SEC and the Big Ten. The SEC looks like they had about 100 players taken. The Big Ten, I'm just looking at the Wikipedia page, guessing they had like 50 players taken. Everyone else pretty much topped out in the 20 to 25 range.
Georgia had 15 by themselves. So Georgia's making their way to the entire ACC amount with just their class, which gives you an idea of kind of where the SEC stood in all this.
Let me tell you how excited I am for Falcons' seventh round pick, John Fitzpatrick, from the tight end from Georgia. Like, dude, that's a throwaway. That guy's not going to play in the league. Like, come on. Anyways.
No, can't really block. Can't. I know.
What was the point of that? Anyways, the ACC, of you know, for only having 21 picks, I mean, four of them in the first round, had five more in the second through fourth round. So some pretty decent high-end players. Ike Ekwonu, the offensive tackle out of NC State, goes sixth overall to the Panthers. I believe, was he the second offensive lineman off the board or the first? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, so he was the first offensive lineman off the board.
Yeah, so that's real good. Good for him and NC State.
Him and then Evan Neal went back to back.
Okay. Yeah. Neal was seven to the Giants.
Yep.
Zion Johnson, guard out of Boston College. He might have been the first guard off the board. He goes to the Chargers at 17.
That was a little bit of a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, really good player for the Eagles.
Yeah. Yep. The ACC actually did pretty well in the first round, and then it was pretty quiet after that for a bit.
It was real quiet.
But they did pretty well in the first round. Yeah, like you mentioned, Ekwonu with six. Zion Johnson at 17. Kenny Pickett, of course, staying on the grounds there. Pittsburgh going to the Steelers at 20. The coolest pick of the draft by far.
I was going to say, you think he's going to have to adjust like any of the you know, the sight lines or anything as he tries to throw passes there at Heinz Field?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's going to be pretty crazy when he just lives in the same place he's lived in for the last 5 years. Except now he's got millions of dollars.
Mike, yeah, did you not listen to the conversation we've just had for an hour about having millions of dollars as a college player?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. Yeah. Kenny Pickett, for his first 4 years of his career, he was involved in pay for play, but they wanted to pay for play to get him to go somewhere else.
Got him.
They didn't want to play. Yeah, we'll pay you to go away.
He's fine.
He's worked out okay. And then Jermaine Johnson, Florida State defensive end, going 26 to the Jets. So
our favorite ACC lifer.
Yeah. Jermaine Johnson, another ACC lifer.
I mean, honestly, kind of low for him. I think I saw Bud Elliott had a bet on him to be like a potential top 10 pick.
Yeah.
Really good pass rusher. Had a really dominant season for Florida State. So now you play for the Jets. Good luck.
Yeah.
Second round, the only pick we had from the ACC was Andrew Booth, the corner from Clemson, goes 42nd to the Vikings. Third round, we had Joshua Zeudu, the guard from North Carolina, to the Giants. And then Jelani
Woods. He got picked before Sam Howell, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, we'll get there. Jelani Woods, tight end out of Virginia, goes to the Colts at 73. Fourth round, you had Damari Mathis, corner out of Pittsburgh, goes to the Broncos. And Zach Tom, I hope I pronounced that right, guard out of Wake Forest, goes to the Packers. Sure, fine.
I hope I pronounced that right. It's a very subtly funny joke. two of the most common names of all time.
He has two first names, Mike. Come on.
Yeah.
It's the Ricky Bobby of Wake Forest.
Hope I pronounced that correctly. that was very funny.
Fifth round, Sam Howell to the Washington Commanders.
Okay, pause. Pause. Lauren Brownlow tweeted something like, Sam Howell's got to be kicking himself seeing some of his linemen go off the board before he does.
Oh, no kidding. Was really, really goodness.
Funny. Really funny.
Goodness. Those dudes are the reason he might have fell. Like,
right? No kidding. Like, I wonder how much of a benefit it would have been for Sam Howell to just sit out, which I don't. Man. I never advocate for that. I love to see the guys play. Like, I don't advocate for sitting out like a whole season. Sit out a bowl game, whatever. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Sit out an entire season. I'm like, man. Come on, there was a discussion about that with Trevor Lawrence. You'll remember, Joey.
Mm-hmm.
After his second year at Clemson, they were like, you know, and they won the title, you know, won the Natty. Mm-hmm. His first year, second year, they were in the conversation, and everybody's like, okay, he's already achieved all he can achieve. He's an All-American, whatever. Like, what's the benefit?
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what the benefit was for Sam Howell. Like, he comes back, has none of his weapons come back, right? Like, mm-hmm. we talked about that at length. Basically had Ty Chandler transfer in, who also got picked, by the way. We'll talk about that later. But like, what was the benefit for Sam Howell? Because now he's sitting in the fifth round after he had a good statistical season, but Carolina did not have a very good year.
Yeah. It's funny because the way that I talk about Sam Howell, it's like, I honestly don't really know that I see a whole lot of difference from the way that I talk about like Malik Willis. Right. Like, both are guys that have a lot of physical tools. They got big arms. They can move. All this stuff, they're going to need some time to marinate in a proper NFL system. It's the same evaluation. And Sam Howell was the sixth guy off the board, but somehow the sixth quarterback was in the fifth round, if that tells you anything about how the NFL feels about quarterbacks in this draft.
I think Sam Howell has the greatest chance, and it's kind of ironic because I'm talking about another – you know, ex-ACC-er and mm-hmm. Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. And I know he transferred, bounced around, whatever. But, like, he fell to the third round, right, to the Seahawks. But it was a perfect situation for him because he was able to play kind of halfway through his first year.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if Sam Howell is in a position to do the same with Carson Wentz, his injury issues, and just overall caliber of play with Carson Wentz. Like, could Sam Howell come in, like, well enough to jump him? It's possible. And mm-hmm. I think Wentz is a good veteran to learn from too, by the way. Like, similar type game to Sam Howell. Wentz is bigger, but like they throw well on the run. They, you know, decent arm, athletic enough, out of the pocket. Like, similar games. So that might be a pretty good situation. I caution myself saying that because I don't think anybody going to the franchise in DC is necessarily in the best possible situation for themselves. But I think for Howell in particular, it's a decent starting point.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see.
Who knows? I mean, I don't know. Who knows?
Nobody ever really knows with quarterbacks in the NFL. It's a total crapshoot. The only thing that I have questions about for you, Mike, is how do you feel about your Patriots taking Bailey Zappe before Sam Howell was off the board?
I mean, let me ask a follow up. Who would be more likely to be rumored as like a guy to push Mac Jones? Would it be Sam Howell or would it be Bailey Zappe?
Probably
It'd
Sam
be Howell, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I think that's part of it too. It's like when Zappe was picked. Everybody
we're trying to draft a like, backup quarterback here specifically. Like
this, right. Not a guy who's actually going to take over the starting job. We want a guy that's like good enough to be a backup and not really a threat. Oh, I know. Let's draft a guy from Western Kentucky. That'll do the trick.
Anyways, 25 picks later, the Vikings take Ty Chandler, and then 4 picks later, the Giants take Marcus McKeithen, both out of North Carolina. Marcus McKeithen, again, a guard. Because apparently North Carolina offensive linemen are desired in this draft. Mike, this was...
I don't know why.
About the most interesting little tidbit I could come up with was this was the first instance of 3 straight ACC players from the same school coming off the board.
Mm-hmm.
The other instance is right after that. At 177, the Lions take James Mitchell out of Virginia Tech. At 189, the Panthers take Amari Barno out of Virginia Tech, the linebacker. And then at 209, the Bills take Luke Tenuta, the offensive tackle, out of Virginia Tech. So all, I mean, all good players. I don't have thoughts on how these fifth and sixth round picks are like really fit with their current teams.
Yeah. So I wasn't surprised about James Mitchell taking a while to come off the boards towards ACL, and he wasn't really able to do a pro day, or, you know, didn't run a 40 at the pro day, didn't participate in the combine. I get it. Or else I think he could have been like a third round pick like Dalton Keene was two years ago, because Mitchell, I think, was a better tight end than Dalton Keene.
Well, that's where Jelani Woods went too, out of Virginia, third round to the Colts.
And, exactly.
I mean, I think he's a bit of a physical freak, but Mitchell has a lot of physical gifts too.
Right, right. So basically, you know, he comes back to school to try and improve his draft stock, and then tears his ACL. That sucks, right?
Yep.
Barno taking until pick 189, so he's raw as a defensive end, but he was like best available. Like, it didn't matter like what channel you put on, whether it was ESPN with Kuiper or Daniel Jeremiah with NFL Network, they had Amari Barno as their best available player starting in like the middle of the third round. And it was like, he is still on the board, but he's a bit raw, didn't have a great year. But he's really athletic. So I thought teams might take a chance on him a little bit before, like a quarter of the way through round six. But
confession time, I did not sit around all weekend and watch the draft on TV. But I'd imagine that Amari Barno was the top pick as soon as N'Kobe Dean went off the board, finally, in like, what was it, the end of the second round?
My God. The jokes were flying about N'Kobe Dean. It's like, did he kill somebody's grandmother? Like, why is he still available?
Apparently, if you have like a degenerative shoulder, you should like at least get that looked at, if not fixed, before the whole draft process, because they gonna find out, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. Which looked fine to me. Like, played in the natty, looked damn good.
So that dude could friggin' run and tackle and predict plays. And like, I don't know what more you want from your linebackers, but apparently not him. I don't know, I guess.
I mean, assuming he stays healthy, God bless everybody else who didn't pick him, because there's going to be some hell to pay, I think. I mean, I would have taken him in a heartbeat.
I think the only back-to-back ACC players we had the entire draft, if I'm not mistaken, 214, this is a compensation pick in the sixth round. The Chargers take Jasir Taylor out of Wake Forest. He's a defensive back. And then at 215, one pick later, the Cardinals take Lasita Smith, guard out of Virginia Tech. Mike, I'm confident that I pronounced that wrong.
No, you pronounced it right.
Yeah.
Lasita Smith.
There we
That's
go.
Correct.
Lasita Smith. There we go.
Yeah, and great spot for him to land, too, because he's pretty good as like he's a pretty solid, like, mobile offensive lineman. So Cardinals run a lot of spread stuff, similar to a college game. I think Lasita Smith landed at a perfect spot. He could play there. I mean, he could seriously play. Like, he could play for the Cardinals.
Yep.
Like, it's a legitimately, like, very good pick, I think, for them.
Yep. Seventh round, 228 to the Packers goes Tariq Carpenter. Listed as a linebacker. He mostly played safety in college, but this is also a guy who's a safety who I think twice had lingering injuries throughout the season because he hit somebody so hard. Like, literally just throws himself into somebody and injures himself doing it, and then just, like, is injured for a lot of the season. But anyways, he'll fit as a linebacker in Green Bay. We'll see if he hangs around or not. 231 to the Bills goes Baylen Specter, linebacker rush end out of Clemson. That's a name I feel like I heard about more years ago than recently. Pretty well-regarded recruit who didn't maybe do a ton at Clemson. Three picks later, Jonathan Ford, defensive tackle out of Miami, to the Packers at 234. And then at 255, rounding it out, the Bears.
Honor, baby.
The Bears, Dub Bears, taking Trenton Gill, the punter out of NC State. So, again, that's your 21 draft picks out of the NFL. Hopefully we didn't misrepresent any of those names or skill levels, but I'm confident we did. So, hey.
Skill levels or skill positions.
I don't know. It's late. I don't know. Draft talk is not really our wheelhouse here on this show, Mike.
Yeah. breaking down. I can't wait to break down tape for next year's draft. You know, start now. Season starts now.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
God. What a weird existence.
I got to say, I don't know. Like, again, without getting into too many specifics, and I don't know that there were, I think the one maybe real major snub, it seems like, is Justin Ross.
Rosen
goes completely undrafted.
And not signed yet, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah. And I've seen a couple of things going back and forth on Twitter where people are using that to say Clemson should not have even cleared him to play if a guy who was doing what he did as a freshman. And, you know, there's maybe some validity to the point. What he did as a freshman, if that guy and what he's capable of is just completely undrafted, there's no way that he's medically capable of handling the NFL. And maybe there's something to that, but that's also, I don't know, that's a kind of a harsh judgment in my mind.
Yeah, especially when he came back and played well last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, didn't really have great quarterback play, but was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, not a lot of receivers that were picked ahead of him have his stat line.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, from a pure talent standpoint, it's not really disputable. From a health standpoint, I mean, that's a whole other thing, which we just saw how Nakobe Dean slid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, I do have questions about. I mean, he had his neck fused, Justin Ross.
I was going to say, like, not sure that I really want to jump in and start criticizing NFL teams for not drafting a guy who's had, like, spinal fusion surgery as, like, a 20-year-old. Like,
yeah. Like, I'm sure they're different because of, like, where the discs were and everything, but he basically had the Tiger Woods procedure, and he's 20, mm-hmm. or was 20. So I'm a little hesitant. I mean, when Dabo Swinney comes out of nowhere, like in the spring, he's like, oh, by the way, like Justin Ross has a degenerative like defect from birth. We're really lucky we caught this. It's like, what?
He's like partially lucky to be alive right now, basically.
Right. Like made it seem like the next hit he takes could be the last breath he takes,
mm-hmm.
you know, when he's kind of made. And I'm not really exaggerating. Like Dabo was saying, like, he's very, very lucky that they found this.
Mm-hmm.
And then when an NFL team passes on him, I don't really sit here all that surprised.
Yep.
When those are the types of things that are coming out of Dabo Swinney's mouth. I don't think he was exaggerating. I'm not accusing Dabo of screwing him with this or anything. I just think it was like a pretty serious thing that happened to Justin Ross.
Mm-hmm. No, it is. It is. And that's, again, it's incredibly unfortunate in terms of, you know, a guy who's that talented and had that many accolades and was that good as a freshman and all of that to then potentially just have no shot at a professional career in football. That sucks.
Yeah.
So, you know, you feel for him. You hope that still he can kind of parlay this into a, maybe, again, we're sitting here recording on Sunday night. We haven't seen him get signed anywhere. Maybe he does. Maybe he does have a professional career. If not, maybe he can become a coach somewhere. Maybe he can, you know, still use this tool as a tool for, you know, success in life, but
right.
We'll have to see. I don't know. Doesn't look great, but
not at the moment. Not looking great. Not looking great as it once was.
Yeah. But best wishes to Justin Ross and hopefully that goes well.
Yeah.
I am struggling to think of any other like real clear snubs in this draft, Mike, from the ACC. Is there anybody else coming to your mind?
Nick Patty. I'm just kidding.
Almost.
No.
That's a good question. It's like, who's the quarterback that I saw a couple of people talking about, like, oh, yeah, they should totally try drafting him. It's like, no, you should not. let's see. No, I think anybody else that, you know, would have been draft worthy is all coming back next year. We got a lot of returning quarterbacks in the conference.
We do. I remember when Nathan Peterman was drafted a few years ago and our immediate reaction was like, Yeah, they shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, that was a waste of a pick. Total throwaway. Yeah, if you go look at yards per game in the ACC passing, Brennan Armstrong, Tyler Van Dyke, Devin Leary, Malik Cunningham, DJ Uiagalelei, Jordan Travis, Garrett Schrader, like all these guys are all back.
All back.
So there's that. So maybe it'll be
a decent year for, should be a decent year for quarterbacks.
Yeah. Well, and a few of these guys, I mean, certainly I would think Armstrong, Leary, Cunningham, maybe Uiagalelei, like all those guys are probably draft eligible and going to the draft next year. So we'll get a better look at those guys at least here in
Uiagalelei, he's going to the draft, not the NFL draft. He's going to be drafted at war or something before he's drafted in the NFL the way he played last year.
Almost, DJ. Almost.
Got all the tools. It's like what, an AK-47?
Like he might be coming back and using the transfer portal after Cade Klubnik takes his job in August.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
DJ, you might have a position change to, like, retirement.
Yeah. Well, hopefully Big Dave didn't hear you say that. He is our guy, after all.
Yeah. He might kill me and my entire family or something. So.
Mike, we're an hour and 16 minutes into this podcast. That's all I've got.
Yeah, me too.
All right, let's work on getting out of here. We're going to come back. We are actually going to record here in another, we'll record again very, very soon. We know exactly what we're doing and who we're going to be talking about.
We do. We have something scheduled, and when we release it is going to be different from when we record it. So I saw you playing some gymnastics there.
I was gonna say, I'm not making a joke. Like we have a well-defined plan
very soon, like in the next 24 hours, even we're recording.
I was going to say that, and then it felt like a dangerous promise to make, but anyways, we're going to do that. Well, so I think the last time we recorded, we told you that the next episode would be another, tell us about your team series. It clearly was not. However, the next time that you hear us after this, it will 100% definitely be the Tell Us About Your Team series. So we've got another one coming up. Keep your podcast feeds tuned here. In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at FTRS Joey. He's at Mike McDaniel SI. Together, we're at BC Podcast ACC. You can send us an email with your questions, your comments, your concerns, your offers to help with the Tell Us About Your Team series. Send it all to the longest email address known to man, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it. And if you're wondering what school it is, it rhymes with Smostin Ballage.
I've now found out what the first question we're going to ask on that episode is going to be. Something about Smostin Ballage. Good job, Mike. Anyways, we'll do that at some point in the very near future. Mike, where else can they find us on the social medias?
Facebook. Facebook.com/basketballconferencerate review. Find all the podcasts there.
Please do. Please do. Even the one about Smostin Ballage.
Smostin Ballage.
We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify. All those good places. Go find us there and hit us on Instagram. It's still our account. I promise. Anyways, we'll figure that out.
Yeah, there's weird. There's probably like weird crypto posts on there by now. Some crypto hack.
Mike, this has been fun. Let's come back very soon and talk about Smostin Ballage.
Smostin. Smostin Ballage.
Yep. Smostin Ballage.
Sounds good.
This is a mess. Okay. All right. Well, until next time, for Mr. Mike McDaniel, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you again very soon. And until next time, go ACC.